You're listening to Strictly Business Podcast with Lindsay Williams.
Normally on a Thursday, I speak to Viv Govender from Rand Swiss in Johannesburg about the day that's just gone by and a few days that have just gone by as well. And it's on the program called The 5 o'clock Shadow. Sometimes David Shapiro joins us as well. Yesterday, I couldn't do that because of technical issues of my own. So today we're going to have a sort of a reflective look back at the week without getting into too many specifics. And Viv is with me now. Now, Viv, I've written down on my little scribble sheet here, City of London. The reason I wrote that is because a lot of companies are considering getting out of the FTSE and listing in the United States, and the major one being Shell, which is the biggest company on the FTSE 100. And there are several reasons why they want to do that: exposure, ability to raise money. But the City of London is not what it was. It is not the financial hub that it used to be, Viv. And it's of academic interest, but of interest to me.
Oh yeah, I mean, most certainly. I mean, to a certain extent, the problems of the UK and the global economy is a legacy of the history of the British Empire. I mean, the UK hasn't been a prominent, a significant, you know, economic power for a very long time. You know, the Germans are bigger, even now India is bigger, Japan has been bigger for a while, the Chinese are bigger. So the UK is more of a middle kind of country. The fact that we basically care about the cable, the pound, the dollar, we care about the FTSE, especially in South Africa, is a legacy of history.
Yes.
And if you look at their performance, look at what's been happening over the last, say, 5-10 years or so, the UK economy has not really been performing. The UK has fallen significantly behind, you know, what the US is being able to do. And, you know, such as the UK, it's the whole of Europe. I just saw a recent stat out. It's comparing, the patents, like significant commercial patents filed in the EU versus filed in Korea. And Korea, a tiny little country, files about half as many patents as the whole of Europe combined, which is amazing. You know what I mean? And you look at, for instance, the Japanese file more patents than the EU in entirety. Despite being a fraction of the size, so it really is a case of what's been happening in Europe has been a lot of stagnation, not much in terms of new market developments. The biggest companies in Europe are quite old, whereas the biggest companies in the US are quite young. So it's not surprising that there's more activity happening in the US than there is in Europe at the moment.
The one thing that really startled me before we move on to something else, Viv, is that one particular company in the United States, whether it was Microsoft or Nvidia, I don't know, but they said this company has a bigger market capitalization than the whole of the FTSE 100 combined. And I didn't know that. I didn't realize the extent to which these companies have come to dominate the major indices. It really is a Goliath we've got here.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you could say Apple. I think you could say Microsoft. There's a couple of these $3 trillion, just about $3 trillion companies out there. We've seen huge improvements. And the thing is that it's like if you had to go and look at the biggest companies in the U.S., the majority of them didn't exist in the 1970s. You know what I mean? If you go to like Europe, in fact, to a certain extent, it's almost a global thing. You look at South Africa, you look at Europe, you look at most of the world, the biggest companies are ancient. And I don't know whether it's the fact that the founders are no longer involved, and therefore these aged companies are not be able to innovate because you need to have somebody in charge to do the kind of stuff that, you know, like Amazon was able to do. And I think unless you have somebody like Satya Nadella willing to come in and take these big risks, with Microsoft, you get a situation in which these companies kind of stagnate. I mean, look what's happening with Apple. Apple has not really been able to do a single significant new product since Steve Jobs has died, except for the AirPods, you know what I mean?
Yes.
But other than that, I mean, the Vision Pro, not much use. The car cancelled. It's very difficult to basically make a dent on a company that's worth that much. But, I mean, compared to Microsoft. Microsoft, a company that has been historically considered to be quite, you know, old and boring, has been very innovative in the last, say, couple of years. And I think the reason for that is that Satya Nadella has like a founder's mindset, whereas Tim Cook is more an operations guy, just making sure everything is done as neatly and as cleanly as possible.
Yes, very well said. Okay, so the City of London's going down the drain. Well, that's the first thing I scribbled down. I looked at Walmart, and that was very interesting. They came out with their results this week. Profit of $5.1 billion over the period, which was triple its previous report. And I thought, goodness me, is this America suddenly coming out of its shell and spending? Because I thought all the money had been used up since that had been saved over COVID. But no, not a bit of it. Or is it Walmart being innovative? Because that's an old business as well. You're talking about old businesses, ancient businesses. Walmart is that. But it's doing so well, Viv.
Well, most certainly. I mean, an interesting thing, I was just looking for another show a couple of weeks ago at the richest people in the world. And it's amazing. If you just add up all the people that inherited shares from, you know, Sam Walton, it would be like over $300 billion, you know what I mean, in terms of the valuation. So he'd be by far the richest person in the world. In terms of Walmart, it's a couple of things. Some people say that Walmart is actually one of those companies that benefits when things are a little tougher because they are considered to be, the cheapest option out there. So if you basically are in a bit of financial difficulty, you go shop at Walmart versus some of the competitors because they're considered to be the cheapest out there. At the same time, they are doing some things that are quite interesting. I mean, for instance, apparently they are having an increase in, you know, non-essential items like, you know, clothing, electronics. They are seeing, you know, benefits coming through with regards to the amount people are spending per shop. Maybe petrol is too expensive there. People want to buy more each time they get in. But, you know, an online sales, 22% increases. That's obviously something very interesting happening at Walmart.
Yes. Next one is very South Africa specific because the International Court of Justice has been the recipient of another delegation from South Africa. And again, it's the same theme, protest against Israel's activities in Gaza. The first submission was several months ago, and that's still being heard. Their whole case is still being put together by the people that matter there. But this time it's to do with the potential invasion of Rafah, which has already started, but not on a giant scale. Now, I just wonder what South Africa is trying to say here. I know this is not particularly market-related, but what is South Africa trying to say, apart from saying what so many people worldwide want to say?
Well, I think what South Africa is doing is, to a certain extent, like certain outsized strengths, maybe because, like, I mean, if you look at the number of countries that had freedom movements that occurred and were successful, the majority of them happened way before the 1990s. We still have a history of activism that I think many other, like, you know, colonial countries like India, etc., have kind of like lost over time. So that kind of gives us a little edge when it comes to these kind of things. And, you know, we are also taking a bit of a leadership role here. But it's not we're not just doing it alone. I mean, apparently Egypt is joining us as well. So I do think that, you know, this is politically very powerful for South Africa, you know, in the global south. The effect it has in the U.S., and I think pretty much the U.S. alone, is the real danger here. We've seen some U.S. politicians come out and be quite negative about South Africa. That might come back to bite us in the future. I don't know. But among other players in the world, you know, Turkey, Colombia, apparently, and Egypt are all joining us in this particular thing. So it's a pretty global thing, except for the U.S. in terms of support for South Africa's motions.
Okay, good. The South African theme continues now, Viv, with the Rand, 1818. Now, it wasn't that long ago that I was thinking, goodness me, it's going to be, by mid-year, it's going to be a 20 to the U.S. dollar. But in fact, no, it retreated from that sort of 1940, 1950 area, and 120 basis points later, to the downside for the dollar, to the upside for the Rand, it's looking very healthy indeed.
Hey, look, I mean, we've had some positives. We have not had load shedding for a couple of months in Africa now. People are saying this is in advance of the election. And if that is true, if what is actually happening here is that they are, you know, kind of using the generators, you know, in advance of the election, and we're going to have massive load shedding thereafter, I think that will be, you know, quite horrendous. But right now, we haven't had load shedding in a while. And load shedding is a massive difference in terms of the operations of the country. I mean, it's not just the fact that you can't operate at the times. It's that, you know, the uncertainty in terms of travel, in terms of moving things around the country becomes much more difficult. You know, when the street lights are out, etc., it cuts quite a bit of our growth. The fact that we haven't had it for, like I said, a couple of months is, I think, a big positive. And that's probably one of the things we see here. Also, I think the chance of rate cuts are becoming, you know, more likely, especially after some of these economic numbers we saw this week, where we saw U.S. inflation fall and we saw, you know, Tulsa's retail sales, which we talked about at Walmart, also come down. And that is, you know, obviously the scale is not enough. U.S. inflation went from 3.5 to 3.4, not enough, you know. And we did see Tulsa, obviously, the retail sales number go to like point at the green negative after you exclude auto and gasoline. But that still is the right direction. And that obviously will help a emerging market economy like South Africa's as well.
It just shows you how sensitive the markets are to any good news. It was the case that when inflation that you just spoke of, CPI inflation in the United States was at 3.4%, went to 3.5%, and every trader says, oh, woe is me, and started to sell. But the sell-off was very, very brief indeed. And as soon as everyone had calmed down, up we go again, and with that slight 0.1% change to what it was 2 months ago, not new ground, to what it was 2 months ago, the S&P, the Dow, and the Nasdaq go to record high. 2 days ago, not yesterday, a little bit of a pause, but on Wednesday, we went to those record highs. And also the other thing is the sensitivity of commodities like gold to the upside when the dollar weakens a bit. Gold currently just above $2,400 an ounce. It seems to me there's an awful lot of money sitting on the sidelines waiting to be deployed, Viv.
Well, most certainly. I mean, the market is pretty confident at the moment that we are going to see cuts coming through. And we are seeing a lot of positivity around that. I mean, I did talk to you a while back about us being like a Wile E. Coyote market running off the cliff and nothing's happening. But it may just be that we might just be able to make it to the other side when rate cuts do start happening. And in that scenario, I mean, when cuts start happening, they're going to be continuing for a while because there were so many raises coming through. There'll be a large number of cuts coming through. It'll last quite some time. And that should be overall positive for markets especially. But regarding the round, I mean, like I said, let's just see what happens after the 29th. And here's another thing as well. It seems to me, from what I've seen with the polling and what I've seen with the reactions of the market, investors in South Africa want the ANC to retain a majority. They think that if there is no majority, it does seem at least, that what we'll have is a bit of chaos. And so we do see the numbers coming out that show, for instance, MK rising, the rand weakens. We see numbers coming out that seems to show that the ANC is doing a bit better. The rand seems to strengthen them a bit. So that's a strange thing, that the party of capitalism seems to be the ANC in the investors' eyes.
That's an interesting turnaround, isn't it? Yeah, I suppose MK could actually be quite good for not only the political economy, because it provides some sort of, I don't know, some competition to the ANC, but also to the general economy and people's perception of South Africa. Because if MK fails, they say, wait a second, South Africa is on the right path. I don't know, maybe I'm being devil's advocate there. A final thing on my list before we get to AI, which has been so busy, even in my tiny world, in the last week or so, Japan's GDP. If anyone else had come out with a GDP figure of minus 2%, if it had been the US or the Eurozone or something, there would be chaos. But Japan comes out with minus 2%, and it didn't seem to me that a lot happened. Maybe I'm missing something, Viv.
Yeah, look, I mean, the Japanese economy has been in the doldrums for quite some time. I mentioned to you earlier about, some of the positivity around, patents and so on. But it does seem that the economy, they've kind of retired. They basically said we've had the craziness after World War II, and we grew like really fast. But they've kind of had a golden period of about 30 years where the economy has pretty much done nothing. The stock market is only barely returning to levels it had, 30 years ago, the 1990s, early 1990s, so 35 years ago almost. And we are seeing, some signs with SoftBank and so on, that there's activity happening. But generally, this is an economy that's, has an aging population, doesn't bring in immigrants, even though there's some moves right now to bring in some immigrants. But generally, it's not a big immigrant thing. I mean, do you see how anti-immigrant the Japanese are? There was a move for people, obviously after World War II and stuff, when things were really bad in the country, to go overseas. And often those people came back to Japan, a few years ago because of the lack of labor and so on in Japan. And they are treated as foreigners. They can be full-blooded Japanese, but they are treated as virtual foreigners. There's people that have lived in Japan their entire lives, indistinguishable from Japanese, who happen to be Korean, and they are treated almost as another class citizenship. So it's very difficult for that country to basically be importing people. So it's an interesting thing that this is a very, it's a country that's definitely having a declining population, a country that's basically going through a period that's going to be very, very, tough economically. But because of internal stability, because of, general law and order, it really hasn't affected market perception too badly.
Okay, Japan, all that out the way. South African market and the rest of the markets worldwide, very, very flat today after a really, really good week. And that's good. Yeah, going to the weekend, counting your money and feeling comfortable about what's going on. We haven't had that for a little while. Geopolitics raising its ugly head again with what's happened in Slovakia. And again, the insidious hand of Putin, I think, was behind all that. But nonetheless, AI goes on. And it's, I saw some AI headlines, but I thought, no, I'm not going to try and bring this up. I'm going to let Viv explain what has happened in the last week of AI, because the week in AI is like a year in other markets.
Yeah, I mean, there's a couple of things. I mean, last week we had, we talked about it, which was AlphaFold, which I still think is, even though it's not the sexy part of the business, it is probably, probably as valuable as the LLM market, because what it is, it's actually a way to, kind of test drugs before they actually have to be viewed beings and so on. And so you could probably speed up drug testing significantly. And drugs, if you go look at what is spent on medical care in the world at the moment, it's double digits in almost every place in the world you look at. South Africa might be more because of some of the NHI stuff, but yeah, it's a really huge market and it's addressable by Google in this way, in a way that nobody else can. But this week was all about the LLMs, all about the consumer. Not business to business, but consumer, business to consumer. So firstly, we started with OpenAI. They came out with this demo. And when I first saw the demo, it was a bit cringy, but very, very impressive technically. And it even looked more impressive after Google stuff came out, because Google may have all the technical skill, but they have a lot of, lack of coolness that some of OpenAI seems to possess. And we do see OpenAI coming out with, I don't know if you ever watched a movie called Her?
No.
With Joaquin Phoenix. Okay, it's one of those movies that came out about 10 years ago. At the time, it wasn't really like a huge success, but it's something that's really, at this particular moment, kind of in the zeitgeist. In fact, Sam Altman just tweeted out the word Her, because it literally is like that movie where you talk to your phone and it's funny. It basically talks back to you. It seems to be almost perfect real-time voice recognition, I think there are little tricks they're using. For instance, you ask it a question, it says, it's an amazing question. Obviously, it's saying that's an amazing question gives it like an extra second to actually do the processing in the background and give it an answer, you know what I mean?
It was ahead of its time. It was prophetic in many ways.
Oh, yeah, no, it is. But, I mean, you've got to watch this stuff. The capacity increase from what it was a year ago till now is amazing. But it does seem that we are in an era where by the end of this year, you'll be able to talk to your phone like that guy and Her talked to his phone. You'll be able to ask it questions, and there's another thing, there's some demos around tutoring and about asking questions about what's happening on the screen, asking it questions about what's happening on a camera. Okay, so it can access your camera and see the world through your camera. It's got multimodality, which means it can do text, vision, and sound. Mm-hmm. Okay, and according to these guys, it's almost as, the other stuff that you think is amazing, things like real-time translation, real-time voice recognition, is almost a side effect of being able to get those other three things right. And we are now will be seeing voice or basically real voice interactivity from your phone. I know there's Siri, there has been other things out there as well. But we can't be like looking at the examples of those things as what to expect when it comes to OpenAI and Google at the moment. Alexa, Siri, those things are just miles behind what we're having right now. And if this thing's able to do the kind of things that the demo seems to indicate it can do, we're talking about revamping what it means to be, using your computer, using your cell phone. Apple, if it doesn't get a hold of this very quickly, I think is in real danger. Because if you basically get Android working on this AI stuff really well, you would switch. Is that good?
You would switch from Apple. No, Apple won't let that happen. Yeah, Apple won't let that happen. Just a quick one again. I keep on saying just a quick one. But there is one thing that I find very intriguing. Fat-busting drugs. I mean, they've come out this week and they've said that not only does it help you lose weight, this particular smart drug, but also it's got benefits for for your heart. It has cardio benefits also. But then the other thing was that I saw that they were saying, I think something like 120 other companies are copying the original from wherever it came. I think it was a European company. What's it called?
Novodisk.
That's it, yes. The largest market cap company in Europe, but they say it's not that difficult to replicate, so the market will obviously be diluted. But it is quite a thing. I mean, if you can lose weight by taking a pill and have your heart health boosted somewhat, that's a game changer.
It's not just that. I mean, they did studies on kidney health a while back, and it was so successful that they had to stop the study halfway through because it's unethical to deny the placebo group the access to the drugs. Okay. And it's I don't know if you follow like general kind of like, you know, popular media, but you remember Kelly Clarkson, the singer from like American Idol?
Yeah.
Have a look at what she looks like right now versus what she looked like 2 years ago. The difference is dramatic. And it's basically, it's going to be every single person with money. In the US, it costs, I think, $1,000+ a month, which to a rich person is nothing.
Nothing.
And that makes me believe that in the next 5 years or so, we're not going to see a single fat rich person. If you're rich, you're not going to be fat anymore.
Well, of course. But if other companies come out with it and it's spread across a range of different pharmaceutical companies, then there's competition. Oh, yeah. Price comes down.
Oh, yeah, no, definitely. But I'm saying it's a weird thing. I mean, do you remember recently when Unilever sold its ice cream business?
Yeah.
Do you know ice cream is the most affected by these drugs? Because people basically who consume this really drop the amount of ice cream they consume. And guess who consumes the most amount of ice cream? People that need these drugs. It's one of those things.
It's so strange. It's, in other words, you can't eat ice cream and have the drug. I thought the whole point was you could eat as much ice cream as you want and stuff these drugs in your face. No.
What this drug does, it doesn't make you lose weight when you eat a lot. It makes you not want to eat. Oh. It's an appetite suppressant. And it's all appetites. It's not just ice cream. It's the appetite for gambling. It's the appetite for alcohol. It's the appetite for another. It's beyond just appetite in terms of food. It's appetite for a lot of things. People who do this gamble less, they use less social media. It's not a case of this makes us thinner. This makes us basically less hungry for everything, basically. Weirdly, you know what I mean? It has effects that you don't think normally. So yeah, it does suppress your appetite, but it suppresses your appetite in terms of like you don't want to have stuff. And when you basically look at the number of people taking it, around about 10%, I think, of the U.S. population has diabetes. And they would take this. Look at the number of people in the U.S. who are overweight. And when this thing becomes available for the overweight,
massive.
That's going to obviously affect it. So you're talking about ice cream. You're talking about chocolates. You're talking about, you know, any of those kind of things. Those guys are going to be affected. Walmart is already seeing a drop off in terms of demand for food, in terms of its groceries, because of what it says is the Ozempic effect. It makes you bite your fingernails less. That's how weird it is.
It is a bit weird, because what you're doing is you're changing human behavior. And I always think that's quite a dangerous thing, there's cell phones and AI now changing your behavior, changing the way you live, changing the way you go about your work practices. Now, we're not biting each other's, we're not biting off our fingernails, we're not eating chocolate, we don't want to drink alcohol. It just changes, we've become humanoids, not humans.
Yeah, but look, I mean, that's going to be the thing going forward. I mean, and we're going to be seeing these drugs having, you know, obviously any side effects are going to be major. But I think the success of Ozempic is going to create not just, you know, people copying Ozempic, but people creating a new class of drugs. I mean, like, you know, back in the day when there was like, you know, for instance, we talk about drugs for any particular kind of thing out there, you'd have a slew of things coming out. The first antibiotic creates a whole bunch of antibiotics thereafter, because people see it successful and they go out and they do things that are similar, or they focus on things that have similar effects. And so I think this is going to be huge, not just for, you know, what's happening with regards to the drug companies, but the overall effect on society, less food consumption in terms of the overweight, but also it looks like, I don't know, obviously these things are always turn out to be in the end having some horrible side effects, but right now it's positive in terms of almost every single effect you can think of in terms of health. Yeah. Because people are just so overweight and so, you know, it's just so much. Heart health, we're talking about, kidney health, we're talking about, you know, diabetes, we're talking about a whole dump of things. That's going to feed eventually into, you know, national budgets, because there are going to be less people in hospitals, there are going to be less people requiring specialized care, et cetera, et cetera. So if these things are almost, a game changer on their own. And we kind of ignored it because of the fact, you know, obviously it's a weight loss drug, but it's not just a weight loss drug. It's a really big impact drug, I think.
Tell you what, they're going to have to wait another couple of years before they can create a drug more powerful enough to stop me wanting to have a beer after we finish this podcast, Viv. But no, I get the point. It's the most extraordinary thing. I'm going to start reading up a bit more on this. Thank you very much, Viv. I'm sorry we didn't catch up yesterday and talk about market specific stuff, but I think our general chat was equally as enjoyable. Thank you very much for your time. Viv Govender is from Rand Swiss in Johannesburg. The views and opinions expressed in these podcasts are those of Lindsay Williams and various contributors and do not reflect the policy, position, or opinion of any other agency, organization, employer, or company associated with strictlybusinesspodcast.com. Assumptions made on the analyses are not reflective of the position of any other entity other than the speaker or the author. And since we are critically thinking human beings, these views are always subject to change, revision, and rethinking at any time. Please do not hold us to them in perpetuity.